This episode of Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by the Madrone Tap House in Old Town Eureka. Madrone has wood fire pizzas, salads, wraps, wings, and a rotating selection of local brews. Madrone is a family-owned business and sources local, organic, and non-GMO products whenever possible. What could be more Humboldt than that? Madrone has outdoor seating and offers delivery, so check them out Tuesdays through Saturdays, noon to 9 p.m. at 421 3rd Street in Old Town, or order by calling 273-5129 or online at madronetaphouse.com.
It's Humboldt Holding Up, the Lost Coast Outpost's Get It Done at All Costs podcast, coming to you live from a stairwell, because that's just how it worked out this week. My name is Andrew Goff.
I'm Stephanie McGarry. Yes, we are definitely having to do a lot of strange things to make it work this week.
Sometimes, the mics don't pick up right. So it's like, oh, now there's people back in the office again. So we don't have all the space that we used to. So I guess I'll go sit in stairwell because it's quiet. It's the room is shaped in a way that's conducive.
The acoustics sound pretty okay in the stairwell to me. So,
I'm sure they're exquisite, and it's another professional podcast experience from the Lost Coast Outpost.
This is going well. So today on the cast, we're very happy to be joined by a legend, a local legend of Arcata, and a personal hero of mine, Ms. Alex Stillman.
Call her a hero. She's your hero?
Yeah, well, maybe.
I guess she's a hero of mine, too.
I admire her, and I think that most people in the area know her, especially in Arcata. She's just a well-known Arcata personality who is very active in the community, and I'd say that probably most people know her for her work on the Arcata City Council, which she
two stints separated by some 30 odd years.
And she was actually the very first woman elected to the Arcata City Council back in 1972. Yeah. So
1972. And then she served, I think she served two terms back then, and then came back and was reelected in 2006.
Yeah.
That's a career. That's a span. That's a span of time right there.
Yes, indeed. And I'm sure that she has some good stories to tell.
We're going to ask Alex about all things Arcata, what she's been up to during COVID, things that she remembers from back in the day. And let's just wind Alex up and let her go.
All right.
Alex, are you there?
Hello.
Is this your first podcast?
Yes. I listen to them.
Yeah. What do you listen to podcast wise?
Whatever someone sends me.
Oh, cool. But
this morning I decided I had to, we got a new brochure rack at the airport. And so the Humboldt Lodging Alliance is the different entities because they're now all separate, like Eureka Lodging, Arcata Lodging.
Yeah.
East, all over the county.
So you were stocking the brochure rack at the airport this morning.
I was.
What role of yours puts you in charge of doing brochure something rack? like brochure rack at the airport?
Well, I'm chair of the aviation committee, and and I'm not a pilot. Everybody on the aviation committee is general aviation. They all have pilot's licenses, and I don't.
Yeah.
And I come from the other side of not flying unless it's commercial. Or with somebody that's a GA pilot. Yeah. And so I come from economic development. And so some of the things at the airport I've been really concerned about was when the Denver flight came in, we had a really antiquated brochure rack. When you're all probably too young, but when you'd walk up to, you get off your plane and you'd walk up to the brochure rack and there'd be a telephone. And then you'd walk up and there were all the pictures of all the motels and phone, and there was a list of phone numbers, and then you push it and say, oh, I'm at the airport, could you come and pick me up? Well, that's the brochure rack we had, and I would say that's probably went in the 70s sometime.
Yeah, that's it. Not a lot of people call hotels when they land.
Well, it hasn't been functioning probably since, I would definitely since the 90s, and it's just sort of sat there empty. And I decided that if we have all these people coming in from Denver, and we should at least be able to have them see what our natural resources are, because that's what BLM is. We have all those natural resource areas, and then you have the state parks, and they have that, and then we have brochures from the various cities and magazines. You know, the Insider. It would be great if that started up again. It was a great publication.
Yeah.
So we're expecting at the airport now, after the Denver flight comes back on June 3rd and the Phoenix flight comes in on June 3rd. Yeah. And if you were to have every seat full that came in and went out, you could have in a day in the airport 1,400 people.
Well, this kind of speaks to, you know, I was trying to think about how I could introduce you on this podcast, you know, because like you have your hand in so many things. And I think back to like when I was first starting to understand who various people in the community were. I think I was like, Alex Stillman, who's that? And I remember somebody describing you as the Grand Dame of Arcata. Do you accept this title, Alex?
Probably. I mean, I don't know. You know, there are other people. You know, I'm a busy bee is probably one of the things too. You know,
yes.
Being on the city council, and you have to understand government moves slow. And then if you have an opportunity to do things outside of government, you want to do it because you can make that move fast. So when you're used to being in the private sector and accomplishing things, when I went back on the city council in 2006, I'm walking down the street with my girlfriends and they're saying, why don't you catch up? I said, I'm practicing working at the level of government. I have to slow down.
Yeah.
Doing anything the way I used to do it, because that's not how it is. There's such procedure to go through. And it's the same at the airport. So some things I can do at the airport that have nothing to do with with how the planes land. Is there fire suppression? Is there, you know, all that stuff. As I could do a brochure rack and I could put up a free library. So those are the two things I'm able to manage out there. And my free library, when our past librarian, head of the library, was here, Nick, you know, I asked him, could I have ACV, which is the airport code, library, you know, Humboldt County Library. And he said, sure. So I have a little sign that says ABC, Humboldt County Library. And I had permission to go get books anytime I wanted from the Arcata Library, but I haven't been in there for years. So instead I put out a call to friends and said, if you're cleaning out your bookcases or if you want to get rid of books, bring them to my porch. And so I have lots and lots of books because they have done that. And you know, during COVID, people were doing different things. At my granddaughter's school, her Arcata High, they were going to do a shoe drive because you get $1,000 for 1,500 pairs of shoes. Oh my gosh, that was quite a feat. So I put it out on neighbor next door and my address, and I would look and I would have piles and piles of shoes. And some of them, my daughter-in-law said she had to throw so many of them away, you know, a certain percentage, because men have a tendency to wear their shoes until there's really nothing left of them. And that they couldn't be dirty. I would imagine they do.
That's me.
And women, you know, they don't really do that as much. And so I've probably collected on my front porch from community members over 500 pairs of shoes.
Wow.
So, and that was great. And my daughter-in-law, she'd have to swing by after work every day to see if I had, where the piles of shoes were on my front porch. And it was fantastic. And so that worked out really well. I don't know how the end result worked, but it worked out really well, getting the shoes on my front porch.
This is something we were going to ask you about, you know, as someone that has a hand in a lot of what happens in Arcata. You know, I was hoping to just kind of get your review of what, you know, this past year of global pandemic was like, specifically, you know, for your little town. You know, what did you see this past year?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, I noticed today in the New York Times, they were talking about this section and about what people did, how they became more crafty. If they pulled out their sewing machines that maybe they hadn't had them out in a decade, They started to make masks, or they started to do something, or they started to make things, or maybe they always wanted to be a potter and they bought a potter wheel. So some of the companies that make those kind of crafty things were really busy. And also Etsy.
I believe Etsy.
Etsy, yeah. You're close.
They did extremely well. So what I did this winter is, you know, I thought, okay, I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna join the Rug Hooking magazine. I'm gonna start getting that subscription because I'm a rug hooker. And so
a rug hooker. Sorry, I thought you said cooker, like cooking, you know, food.
You're showing us a pillow. It's like, is that like some sort of crocheting you're doing?
No, it's hooking.
It's hooking. Okay, so, Andrew, she just said.
So, hooking is not the same as crocheting?
No. Oh, it has a hook like crochet. Okay. It's not quite the same. It's a different, it's not knitting either.
Yeah.
So we got into, there's a whole group of us at Rug Hook, and you know, we always call ourselves hookers and people, you know, whatever.
But I wasn't gonna make the joke. I was gonna wait for you to do
And so this winter I got all these, I started getting the magazine coming every couple of months. I go, I think I'll buy that person's book. And then I rug hooked all these different things, you know, because I had stuff. And I sent this morning to Connie Stewart this article that was in the New York Times, because she is a recipient of a lot of my rug hooking. She complained about her doors not staying open. So I did two bricks for her. She complained that she liked some pillows. So I did two pillows. And then I had another friend who's always freezing up in Friday Harbor. And so I sent her that article this morning too. And I said, and guess what you got? It's all those scarves I knitted. So it was, that's what they talked about, is how people went into crafting, get different things. And so it wasn't until just, I think February, because I'm a member of the Fire Arts Center and I'm a board member and an inception member, I guess you'd say. I thought, okay, I'm going to start going back, because everything was limited and you could sign in to when you would be there. And I share a studio with four people. And so we were the only one of us would be in there. So I thought, okay, I'm going to start going back. And then doing glass again, fused glass, warm glass. And I just got into it and it's been fun, but I'm only doing experimentation. So I have all these things. I'm like, I've never tried this. I've never tried that. And that's what,
Arcade. The town as a whole, like what did you, as you kind of walked around over this past year and just, you know, watched various businesses closing, some of them, you know, adapting to try and meet the moment. Like what was your sense of how Arcata was doing?
Well, I really think it was important that the city got into the fact that they could allow the restaurants just to move out onto the streets and or into parking lots or whatever, that if they owned them. But you know, Arcata, we only own one parking lot, unlike Eureka. And so we anyway, people moved out onto the streets and they put up their tents. And I also thought it was really clever with what people did. I think of the burger place over behind Co-op, and they had some outdoor seating, and then they had this sort of garden that was so.
And burger joint.
They completely changed that around, and they with these, I would say, pergolas or whatever you might want to call them, into the grass area that was always sort of iffy. It looks really nice, and what they did in front. And I'm really impressed with how people stepped up and improved their properties, because we've never really felt like we could be outside. We've always felt like, you know, we eat inside, we have this terrible climate, whatever. But this has given us an opportunity to really see that outdoor dining, whether it's lunch, breakfast, I mean, Brio has always done it, but everybody else is now can see that it's a real possibility. And it's something people really enjoy. Of course, we needed to do it during this time because you had to be separated. But I think it's that to me is a big asset. And I see that going to happen for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think that'll be here to stay. Yeah. I love that, too. I think when I'm walking around in downtown Arcata now and I see all the places that have expanded to outdoor, whether it's in a parking lot or in their own little yard space or just kind of on the sidewalk, like I'm thinking of like Jambalaya right now, I think that it really creates a a more welcoming atmosphere. Like you just see people like sitting there and, you know, having their drinks and their food and talking. And it just like, it makes it seem kind of happier, you know?
It's a new vibrance.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's great. Now for retail, it's been hard. Yeah. You know, a lot of the retailers, they were closed. Then they opened, not every day, not from the hours that anyone had in the past, not open on Sundays, you know, a lot of changes.
So before, you know, we get too deep in this, I actually wanted to get you to comment on some actual breaking news, if you could.
Oh my God, I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, okay, well, let me set it up. So people that don't know, like, you know, so we're recording this on Friday. This morning, Governor Newsom held a big press conference laying out some spending he wants to do to kickstart California. And of interest to us, obviously, in his budget was $433 million to turn Humboldt State into California's third polytechnic campus. You know, obviously this is something that's been floated around for months, but you know, there it is. This is happening. What does this mean for us, Alex?
Oh, you know, well, I have different opinions. I'll have to see what I'll say first, but it's very exciting. You know, I sent off yesterday just for the heck of it, because I was thinking about it. I was thinking now that Humboldt owns the Craftsman Mall, and that maybe they should get the developers of the village, hire them to come in and build their plan on the Craftsman Mall, the housing plan that they had. The one they originally had, not the one that the city council kept developing. Yeah. And because we're gonna need that. We need clean housing. Whenever I say something to my daughter-in-law, she always says, oh my gosh, we have, you know, no wonder people don't wanna live in Arcata on these apartments or this or that, because people don't take good care of their properties. And I really think it's time for us to have some decent, really good housing for students coming up here.
Well, how do you think this change in focus for the university is going to, like, how's that going to affect the town, you think?
Oh, well, you have people on both sides that, you know, you have people that don't like the university, you have people like the university. If you don't like the university, why did you move here? First of all, you moved here because you maybe didn't like the university, but you liked everything they provided for you. And you like the culture aspects, and you like to be able to go to the plays, blah, 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 sports, whatever it might be. And so this is a time to sell your house if you don't like Humboldt. If you have no desire to have it go into a polytechnical, really get out of town, go somewhere else in the United States that you prefer better. So I know that sounds really harsh, but we have to embrace our biggest employer. You know, biggest employer in Humboldt County is Humboldt State University. And we have to embrace it. If it wasn't for that, would we be living here? Well, I know I wouldn't have ever come up here, because I came up as a older college student. I was 31 when I moved here to go back to school and to get my BA. And I had my two children. I was divorced, and I moved up. I met a professor who was working up here. I came to visit the area, and I thought, I could live up here. I grew up in Scottsdale, Arizona, when it was rural, and the only road paved was Scottsdale Road, and that was in the 50s. And I was living in San Francisco out in the Richmond District, where the first time I came to visit, I walked downtown. I was on 11th and K. So I walked downtown. I walked all around the plaza. I turned around. I came back. And I said, "Woo! This is like a ghost town. There are all these empty storefronts." And I didn't see anybody out walking, and only one car on 11th Street when I walked back. So for me, living out in the Richmond District, where the buses stopped at midnight and they started at 6 a.m. and that's how you got around, and down a block away was Safeway, and there were people always on the street, and it was so different. But you know, over the years it's changed, and I was really happy I've moved here, because I think I was able to get in on the ground floor and a lot of changes in Arcata. And if it wasn't for a college professor that was at the house one time for a party we were having, and he said, "You know, just talking to you, you should really consider running for Arcata City Council," because maybe it's because I'd lived in San Francisco. Maybe it was just, I don't know what. And he said, "You're on the right side of the issues that need to be really dealt with in the city." So I thought, so I asked Ben and he goes, yes, he probably thought, I'll get her out of my hair because it'll get her busy. And you know, I was in school at the time and I had grown up in a family where my mother always said, you have to give back to your community no matter where you live. And my father always said, you have to become politically involved in your community. It's really important. So with those two parameters being, I ran for city council and there were 13 of us running and I was the first woman to ever run and I came in third. So I think then shortly after that, 2 years after that, Ward Failer was our mayor at the time. And when he decided not to run, I became the mayor. Wesley Chesbrough and Dan Hauser had been elected that year. And so I went to my first HUBWA meeting, which was the one dealing with the waste treatment. And they wanted to take all of our sewage and pump it to Eureka and then do an outfall. And you know, I'm thinking, gosh, you know, I had been for a year at least preparing myself to go to a four-year college because I was going to go to San Francisco State. And taking all these classes at San Francisco City College, I'm thinking, what happened to tertiary treatment? You know, what happened to all, you know, what happened to this and that, all the things that, you know, I was hearing about. And I decided, I came back. Well, Winslow and Kelly were the, was the engineering firm, and they gave me documents, and it took two loads for me to get them out of Eureka City Hall, where the meeting was, to my car. They just said, when you finish reading all these documents, you know, charts and charts and charts, let us know if you have any questions. And so when I went back in the city hall, I'm saying, well, where's something alternative we're doing? What, you know, tertiary treatment, blah, blah, blah. Well, at the time, George Allen had been raising salmonoid in a combination of seawater and sewage effluent, you know, after it had been processed and so forth. And so he'd been doing that. That was his thesis in college, and he'd been doing that for a long time. And I remember his presentation when he came to the council. I go, wow. And that was down in the corporation yard. Now, Bob Gearhart has that space, and he uses it because he was one of the professors that George recruited, along with Stan Harris, who was an ornithology. And Bob was a brand new professor at Humboldt, and he was in environmental engineering. Anyway, those three are the ones that worked on creating and that Arcata Marsh. And that's why you'll see their names down on the various ponds.
We were talking a bit before this about, you know, the time that you were elected to the council, Alex, and I didn't realize that you were the first woman to run. I knew that you were the first elected, but that's amazing to learn. And I also didn't even think of that at that time that the marsh was such a big project that you were working on, and now that's become, you know, it's kind of like,
you know, we don't think anything about it anymore.
Yeah, but it's one of the greatest, you know, things about Arcata. I mean, it's just this incredibly innovative.
It's a crown jewel.
Yes, exactly.
Like the forest, we have two crown jewels. Yeah. We have the forest and we have the marsh.
Yeah, I agree. Another thing that we were talking about that was going on during that time that I think was a big part of, you know, everybody's campaign in that time that you said, you know, 13 people were running when you got elected, was the plan to construct the highway through Arcata.
Oh yeah, stop at four.
Yeah, we thought maybe you could.
People still can't believe that. But so when I came out, you know, when I ran, I had a sheet of paper like this. This was my camp, you know, what I stood for, and no picture. So when I put out stop at four, all of a sudden this group that was working on it asked if I would be one of their candidates. So they did a lot of legwork. Susie Van Kirk, they walked all over. And I also had a lot of college professors' wives who walked door to door for me too. And I also did, but you know, covering everything. It was great to have that kind of support from the community.
So what were the the competing sides as far as that highway project in the 70s? It was pretty contentious. It was going to be
three lanes on either side, expandable to four. So it's two lanes expandable to three.
Yeah, and why was it so contentious? Who supported it and who was against it? You kind of lay out this sides on this.
It had been worked on for years before I ever moved to town. Mm-hmm. And by the time, I moved to town, you have to think about the streets. We have a one-way street on H and a one-way street on G. And G Street used to be 101. And the logging trucks, everyone went up and down that street. And there's great historic photographs where you can see that. So with the proposal of the freeway coming through, they changed the direction of the streets. They made G one way north and one way south. And that was all in preparation. So at the time, our public works director was Guy Conversano, and he'd been working. You can imagine that you have spent years and years working on a project, and then all of a sudden it's erupted and it changes and people are fighting your project. And it's a physical project. Caltrans spends years thinking about how they're going to do it and planning it. It's not, Caltrans doesn't do something in a year.
Yeah. No.
They spend 15, 20 years planning projects.
Yeah.
Well, what was for a lot of people like me, I was born in 1982. Like I have no recollection of an Arcata that didn't have a 101 going through it. What was there? I assume they had to remove some things in order to make way for this highway.
They took out about 200 living units.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a lot.
We've never caught up. I mean, we increase, people come and move in, but we've never been able to take those 200 living units that we lost. Now, that's not to say some places weren't moved, and there was a whole complex on the way up to Library Circle on the left-hand side that was sometimes it was housing and sometimes it was faculty offices moved over to 7th Street. And that was an enormous project. And Edith Stromberg worked on that. And she and her husband, they made that move. And I look at that sometimes, and I think that was an amazing move. So we kept some, but just a loss of 200. It's hard to make up that. On the east side towards the campus, where you have LK Wood and so forth, if you went down, there was all this housing. Because originally, there was a creek that went along in there. And then later, they put an expressway. But when you read historic accounts of people coming to our area, you'll see they come into the side of West Arcata, and they need to go to the side of East Arcata. And some people would walk through the gully and come up, and then there would be some little bridges going across. And so that's how you got through this gully. Mm-hmm. And that's where the freeway is. It's in the gully. The gully would be a separator anyhow. And
you're talking obviously to a couple of whippersnappers here, Alex. I just want to ask you, what was Arcata like in the 70s? You were a young student and council member. Let's say Friday rolls around. Where is Alex Stillman on a Friday night in Arcata?
Well, I can tell you where my husband was. He was at the keg.
The keg? Okay. Now, what even is that?
Okay, the keg is, and when you go to Northtown, and I think it's 17th, there is a Chinese restaurant there.
Yeah.
That was the keg.
Oh, okay.
That's where all the rip-roaring parties were?
That's where the Friday night faculty would go.
Okay.
They could have dinner, and you had to have your ID with you, and the door, oh my God. I couldn't have looked under 21, but that bouncer, if I forgot my driver's license, he wouldn't let me in.
Well,
it's just the way it was. And sometimes I would, Ben was supposed to, if Ben listens, sometimes I would pull up and I let one of the kids out of the car and I said, would you just go and and tell the bouncer that Ben needs to come. We're here to pick him up or whatever, you know. So we're supposed to be somewhere or whatever it was. But yeah. But that was the place. The other place that a lot of the faculty went, and they had dart boards, and that was Toby and Jack's. And they had a bar place. And so that was another hangout.
Right.
But you weren't part of the rip roaring 70s.
Oh, another was the boot.
The boot. To me, that sounds like a real
hoot.
Kind of sounds like a rough and tumble kind of spot to me. The boot.
Well, okay, it's right now it's right next to the record store.
Oh, okay, sure.
Oh, yeah. All under heaven.
It's all under heaven. That was the boot.
Oh, okay.
They had a long bar in there.
Okay.
And so we have at the Phillips House Museum, we have a bookcase that is full of encyclopedias. So at the Swedish bar, they had to figure out some way to settle disputes. So they bought a whole collection of encyclopedias so they could look up the answer. It's not like taking your phone out.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah. Encyclopedias
if you're right or wrong.
Yeah.
Or if I'm right or you're wrong. So we have those. We have that set of encyclopedias at the Phillips House. And so I think it was that, and it was the boot. That's how I remember it. And then it became a place that was which I can't remember the name of it.
It was Tiffany's.
It became Tiffany's.
It became Tiffany's before Tiffany's then moved over to what's now the backside of Plaza.
Stephanie grew up in Arcata. She has all sorts of.
Oh, and you would know about Tiffany's.
I remember
Tiffany's.
In my childhood, it was already at the other spot behind what's now Plaza Design.
Yeah.
But I do know that it used to be in that spot that's next that's all under heaven now.
Which is the boot.
But I never heard of the boot. This is the first time in my life I've ever heard of the boot. I'm sure some people are going to get real excited about
it. But Alex, I'm trying to get you to tell me about like all the fun parties you attended in the 70s.
It doesn't
look like I'm going to get that out of you.
The 70s were an, are you going to cut some of these things out?
Not if they're interesting. Not if you give me the.
Well, you know, I just remember one time I heard about this, but I hadn't experienced it. But I went to this. But this was what was going on nationwide.
Sure.
And so why would liberal people, not be thinking of doing something like that? Yeah. But I can remember going to this party and. You know, I told Ben, I want to go home now. You know, it's late. Anyway, he goes, well, I'm not ready to go. I said, just let me have the keys. I'm going to leave. So I said, no, we're going to throw the keys in the middle of the floor and then we'll see who goes home with who.
Oh boy. I was wondering if this was where that was going.
And I said, well, I'm going with my own keys and I'm going home.
Okay.
And I don't remember if Ben came with me or if I left him. I don't know. But
okay. So Alex did not participate in the key party.
It never appealed to me.
Okay.
I know it appealed to a lot of people and just different things around that. You could go to San Francisco and you could go to these clubs and you just change rooms and have many partners. And my psyche can't handle that. And it was never good at that ever. So probably that's one reason I'm really happy that I have been single for many, many years. And
yeah,
and
how many years have you been
partners?
How many years have you been single now, Alex?
Well, in 1980 I got divorced, and since then I've had maybe two partners since then.
Yeah.
Maybe no more than 2 years or three, something like that. But most of the time I'm by myself. That means I want to go home, I can go home. I want to go over there. I want to go to the store. No one's going to say to me, oh, would you stop at CVS and go to the dog food place? And I go, no.
I just wanted
to go get a Swifter or whatever it is.
Alex goes where Alex wants to go.
I love that. Yes, that is so true. When you have a partner, you always have to stop it. You always got to stop at the store and get something.
My mother would say, why would I at this time in my life want to get married where someone says to me, it's cocktail time, it's 5 o'clock, or would you make my drink or whatever? And she goes, I don't want to be a servant to someone, you know. So, what do you think? I could say that maybe that's where I got some of that.
So for pretty much, you know, the last 40 years, you've been able to kind of set your own pace and everything. Like what advantages do you think that has allowed you as far as, you know, being a someone that's out in the community, doing community services? You know, would you say that level of freedom has enabled you to do a lot of the work that you've ultimately done?
Yes. I think, you know, I don't have young children. So if you have young children, you know, I used to think when my kids were, one day they're going to grow up. I wonder how soon. Well, now I'm thinking they're, you know, they're both in their mid 50s. What in the world? Life went really fast. And my oldest granddaughter is going to be 25. And I'm going, whoa, why did I ever wish that maybe they would grow up and sooner than later or whatever, you know, I think about that now and I'm going, that I should have tried to keep them little for much longer and that kind of, you know, that's a special time and it's really, and I think I couldn't have done all the things I do if I wasn't just, not a particularly a free spirit, but like, you know, having the freedom to do what I want to do and not having someone's whatever. I don't have to keep track of anyone. No one has to keep track of me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like we were saying, you're still clearly a very active part of the community. And I don't know if we've mentioned it yet, but we're talking so much about, you know, the history of Arcata and all of these different places. And I know that you serve on Arcata's Historic Landmarks Committee.
Mm-hmm. That's a new appointment in the last year.
Oh, really? I thought, I did not realize. I thought you had been on there for a little while.
Well, I have been involved in the Historical Site Society of Arcata.
Oh, okay.
That's a museum. It's different. I've been involved in that since 78 or 9 or something. And because when I was in San Francisco, I was part of the Junior League and they were doing a book called Here Today, because San Francisco government was really interested in getting rid of working Victorians. And there was a whole sections of town. They just wanted to wipe them all out. That was also the time that you had urban renewal and you had money to do that. And you know, we saw a lot of urban renewal that happened down in San Jose. And it took years and years and years for anything to go into those places that they wiped everything out. So they thought they would do this book. So that got me really interested. I said, oh, I'll volunteer on that. And that got me interested in historic structures. And at the time, Ghiaccioli Square was being talked about. And they were then they were thinking about the creamery. So when I came up here, the old city hall still stood on the corner of 9th and G, and it was slated to be torn down. The reason is, when I went to see the city manager, he said is that the floor slopes, there's water in the basement in the winter, the hot water heater blew up. I found out how that, you know, somebody turned it on and pushed, threw a match towards it. Of course, it went poof. And there was one other thing. Maybe they needed a bigger city hall because the top floor belonged to the Masonic Lodge, and Masonic Lodge built a new facility down on old Arcata Bayside Road area. Mm-hmm. And so they took it down for a parking lot. Mm-hmm. And that was my first. And then the second thing, when I met Jim Test, who later served on the city council when he first come back from Vietnam, he already had that in him, and they were going to take down their two houses are called the minor houses, and they had minor sisters in them. Mm-hmm. And the one that they wanted to remove was where the Scoop is now, which Mike Wilson owns now.
Yes.
And so I can remember Jim's, I wish I had a picture of him because there was a photo, but he's standing there in his sort of little, you know, baggy clothes and his long hair, and you know, rallying us all around the fact that this building shouldn't be taken down. And it wasn't. So
yeah. And so that's something that you really do, you know, as part of this, the committee is to try to preserve buildings, right? Or
You mean the Historic Landmarks Committee or the Historical Sites Society, which runs the Phillips House Museum?
I don't know. All of them?
Or the Main Street program, which I brought the, you know, I was able to get that bill introduced into California, and I worked on that bill. And it was at the time, there were so many cities that were having issues with malls being built on the fringes of their cities, taking away from their downtown vitals being vital. And so the Main Street program, it's what came out of the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and they did a pilot where they chose towns in different parts of basically the Southeast, the Midwest, that part of the United States, to do a trial to see if they could come in and do use a four-point program and revitalize these towns. And I had gone to a conference that I'd heard about up in, maybe it was Portland, Salem, somewhere up there. And they were talking, it was on economic restructuring. And I had read about that. And I'd asked Roy Robinson, who is our city manager in the city of Arcata, I wasn't on the council, if they would just pay my fee and I would take care of everything else. And so coming out of that, I realized that there was this whole movement of Main Streets, which I really didn't know much about, because Washington State was, Oregon was. And so, and there was one other person at the conference, and he was from the city of Vista. And he, at that point, his city council was really close to Duke Machen, who is the governor. So, you know, we were talking, I said, geez, we should really have something like this in California. He said, if you can get it introduced, because it was a Democratic assembly, I'm sure I can get my council members to get it out, get the governor to sign it. I love challenges. So Dan Hauser at that point, he was our assemblyman, and he was bringing people up here all the time on one thing or another. And so one of them I met, he was in finance, and he just couldn't understand how Main Street would work financially. I said, it does, and so forth. Anyway, he wrote the legislation, and then he said, okay, now we'll go over and see who will even put it in, consider putting it in the hopper. And so we went over to see an AA that was for an assembly person in the southern part of the state. And we talked about it, and then I walked out the door, and there was a fellow I had met. See, his name is David, but I can't think of his last name right now. And he worked in national co-ops, and I had met him in Arcata because he had been here with Cindy Foley, who was, that's her married name now, but she had other names when she was here, in co-ops. And he walked in right after me, and he told me later that the woman said, well, what do you think of her? What do you know about her? And he said, she wouldn't come in and talk to you about something unless it was really worthwhile and it was important. So I always have to thank him, because it could have been thrown in the trash right then and there if it wasn't for him being in the next appointment. And his wife was the mayor of Davis at that time. So, and our city manager had moved down there, and he was in the city. But anyhow, as the city manager, Roger Story. So it's all these little incidents that you don't know what it is that is going to make something actually happen. It's just, it's a fluke, I guess you'd call it, or an opportunity or an unknown. So I really wonder if we would have, if he hadn't come in the door after me, maybe it would have been years later before we ever had Main Street in California.
Wow, yeah. Well, basically, though, and I mean, in all of these roles, I'd say, I mean, it's clear that, you know, historic preservation, keeping like the character of a town alive, is important to you.
Well, you know, having a vital community is really important, I think. You know, another, I'm just going to give you, here's another fluke.
Okay.
So Moritz Scott, who was head of the sculpture department at Humboldt State. Humboldt State used to have a sculpture walk on campus. And so I went up for the sculpture walk one time, and Mark is walking alongside of me. He says, "Why doesn't Arcata have any sculpture?" I said, I don't know. You know, it's not something we thought about doing, and et cetera. So I got a call, I don't know, maybe a month later, a couple of weeks, whatever. And it was Becky Evans and Bob Benson, both artists. And there was a woman that had a foundation, and she was, I think, from Missouri. And they said, "Do you want to come to our yard and have a glass of wine?" I said, "Okay." I think we have someone we want you to meet. "Okay, whatever, you know. So I went, and this woman said to me, after she wondered why we had no sculpture in our downtown, she said, "I'll match you dollar for dollar up to $10,000 if you can get sculpture into the downtown." Oh, good, another challenge. So I talked to Mort about it, and he assigned it to Sandra Schwetman, who was his assistant. She was another professor in the department, in the sculpture department. So we designed it just like you would have go off for a competition. And so we had a little brochure. You had to pay $5 to enter. We had all these, they had to make a model. It had to go through the city process, all the departments to get approval. And meanwhile, I started asking, I asked our Arcata Foundation. They gave me some money. I went to Mia Bowen. I got some money from them. And I just started collecting. And when I was getting a little short, I'd see someone on the street. I'd know, "Do you have an extra 20 you could give me?" And they'd just take it out of their pocket and give it to me. Because we were doing this program where every sculptor got so much money for their materials, and then they got a stipend. So that's how we started the sculpture program. And then after we got through the first one, and the city agreed to put up the bases, our first four bases. And then after that, redevelopment goes, "Oh, wow, we had no idea this was going to look like this. Can you just stop for a minute, please? Can you just stop this program for a minute? Can you stop this?" Well, never mind. I just had the airport director was calling me in.
Oh, sorry. Do you need to take, you can go ahead and.
He hung up. I'll have to call him back. I know he's in transit.
Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah, no, we have people people take calls in the middle of this all the time.
I should have taken it. Anyhow.
We'll just pause. We can't really like pause it, but you know, we would cut that part out. Okay.
Well, that's okay. I'm going to turn my phone over because now I have another phone call.
Well, I appreciate the contributions of the sculptures in Arcata, because those are nice.
So we stopped. It really basically stopped when redevelopment stopped. Oh. After that, because with redevelopment dollars, you have money that you could do projects with, but redevelopment hasn't. And that's one way Eureka got so many parking lots, was through redevelopment. They took down a lot of buildings and they created a lot of parking lots, which now they're looking at putting housing on. And we really need housing in Eureka. And a lot of people go, "Oh, you know, we have this NIMBYism everywhere. And in Eureka, they have it too. Why would we want them?" But, you know, if you don't have, if someone makes $30,000 a year and they don't have a place to live, because we are so short on housing. And that may be someone that is a clerk in your store. It could be someone in fast food. It could be your housekeeper. It could be the person that cuts your grass. Those are all the people that you employ, and they need housing. And maybe they aren't down and out, living in doorways. They might have to if they can never find housing or live in their cars. But they want to, you know, work, and they need a place to live. So there's this NIMBYism going on in Eureka right now about providing housing for that contention. People like you.
We know all about the Eureka situation. I've been writing about that a little bit, but
I hope the council can be, I know what it's like, you know, you have these issues and you have, don't like it. This goes back and forth and it's very difficult. And so in the 70s, I would think about things about I would be asked, how did you make that decision? And, you know, I just calmed down, you know, just calmed down for a second and think. And I would think about, how did I want Arcata to be for my grandchildren? Of course, my children were young. So, you know, I'm thinking way out and now I have these grandchildren here and one just turned 21. But, you know, this was back in the 70s. So you have to be strong because people are going to come to you and they're going to beat you up. not going the way they want you to go. And it's tough. And you just have to hold your guts and just go for it and say, you aren't going to be happy with this because you don't want anything new. I mean, it's just like, think about all the people you hear about this. I just moved here. I want the gate to close after me. How many times have you heard that? I've heard it a lot. They expect this big gate to go down because they came here and now they came in there. They want to be the last one, but gee whiz, maybe someone should close the gate before you got here.
Yeah. No, it's a weird, it's a weird position to take. Like people that, I experienced this a lot in Humble, people that are just like, well, we've been here forever. And so as though that gives people more of a say on how things should be. And I just feel like, you know, we could work together and make this place just a little bit more welcoming and a little bit more accessible for people from all walks of life.
Well, the other thing is we have to remember is that the reason we have the architecture we have in Eureka is it was touted by the National Trust is that Eureka has the most intact architecture. I mean, it had it for years. It's because we were so poverty driven. You know, we didn't have any money. Nobody could afford to tear their house down or do anything because they didn't have any money. And that's why we had Eureka has such intact architecture, street after street after street. Mm-hmm. And because we were not economically prosperous, I guess you'd say. That's why people planted way back then palm trees. If you could afford palm tree, you had to be prosperous. They were exotics and they were expensive. Yeah. And so we have to remember that the world is growing and we have assets and we want to grow and we want more people to be prosperous. And I have one friend that works for government and she said, so the way she sees it is that she gets a good salary working for poor people and figuring out, you know, how little this is and that for poor people, but poor people never get ahead, but you know, she'll be okay, but the poor people will still be poor. And it bugs her because she thinks that we need to be able to lift rising tides, lift all, or whatever that saying is. We need to lift people. And that we have a lot of jobs are coming in here, a lot of industries, and they fit within our environment. And we need to allow those jobs to happen and to have jobs that are viable for people to be able to raise their families.
So as we've said, you've played, you know, maybe as large a role as anybody in shaping Arcata over the last 50 years. And in that time, you've had countless issues. Is this the town that you fought for? Like when you look at Arcata now, can you see, you know, all the effort that you put in?
Mm-hmm. I can see it. So in 1979, we had a fire on the corner of 9th and H. So from 1979, from that fire until 1998, you know, it would probably 1988 or, you know, you had to start planning. Maybe it was right in there somewhere, 78, whatever. And, 87 in there somewhere. It could still be empty because what I did at that time with our zoning code is our zoning code said on that lot, in order to build anything, you had to have 43 parking spaces. So you just have to build a parking garage for cars and never have a project. So it took, I don't know how long it took, but I just decided I was going to dog it. And I was going to dog that until we finally ended up without any parking requirements in downtown certain, you know, area, because, and it was a multiple families that owned it, you know, a generation of a family that owned it. And whenever they wanted to do anything, they weren't going to be able to because of the parking. So you always have to look at what is causing your issues. And that was one. Mm-hmm. And so my son and I ended up buying that building. And now we have three businesses, commercial in the front, and we have two apartments that are in the back. So, you know, those are the kinds of things. And I got really into historic preservation and the buying places and rehabbing them that were vacant, empty. My first one, when the PG&E guy came, he said, "Well, how many days before I have to come and turn off the PG&E this time?" And I said, "Well, you won't be doing it this time," because we bought a house on 6th and J, and I lived in that, my children, we raised the kids and so forth. And then I bought another house down on G Street, which I sold last year. And when I bought that, all the cabinet doors, the cupboard doors, were nailed to the windows. And there were just 2x4s across the doors because somebody had taken the doors. There was no bathtubs or anything. They were all gone. And that was the second one. And so, and then I had a third one I wanted to do. And there, the bank is now over where there's a Mexican restaurant in Sunnybury. And I went to him and I said, "You know, I have another project." He said, "Well, until you finish your first, the one I'm loaning, I'm not interested in loaning you." I said, "Okay, are you absolutely sure?" And he goes, "Yes." So I went to another bank and I got a loan. Well, when we're almost through with that project, he comes by and he says, "Okay, I'll loan you more money." I said, "Well, I don't need your money because I've gone to someone else and gotten it." What? He was surprised, because you don't want to stop. You have to keep going. And it was like I was driven. I had a nest egg of money that I could put into a project. I always had to get that nest egg out again so that I could go to my next project. And that's how I sort of did things for a long time. I'd inherited this money from my grandmother, and I just used that as my nest egg. And I was really fortunate. I've been very, 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 very fortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. I, as you said, you can see, you know, your little fingerprints of things you've been passionate about all over Arcata. Yeah, we're getting near like our time here on how long we do these things, but we want to thank you for spending some time and dealing with our technical issues in order to talk with us a little bit about Arcata. Is there anything else, you know, that you would want to put out into the Humboldt world? Anything on your mind? Anything you've been feeling?
I know last night I went to a meeting. I know there's a concern about the percentage of homeless people or people that are unhoused people that we have in Arcata and Eureka, et cetera, and the trash that's left behind, et cetera, you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. And so the only solution really is to put our money towards more housing and or to figure out how to find places that for those that don't want to be housed, can find, be in a situation that's safe and figure out how to do that. And I think that's really important. With the laws in California that keep changing, you can't just rouse someone out and send them on their way unless they have, you know, unless you can provide them with a place to go. So that's an issue that has to be dealt with. But what I'm really excited about is the hostel in Eureka. I think that's going to be so cool.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We heard about that. That is cool. There used to be a hostel in Arcata long ago, I remember. Now we haven't had one in a long time.
Yes, it was up in what they call Arcata Heights.
Yeah.
It was up there. But this is fun, right down in Old Town. With Jefferson's, that whole West community. I never get their name quite right. I think it's going to be something there's such a need for bicyclists coming through here. And
that trail is going to change.
All the trails. I was thinking that as well. Well, thank you, Alex. We really appreciate the time that you've given us. And I'm sure I can speak for both of us that we look forward to seeing you out in person in the community, you know, going forward. We hopefully we'll be out doing fun Humboldt stuff again this summer.
It's gonna be it's gonna be a big summer, Alex.
Is Mr. Humboldt going to come back?
I think, you know, we usually do that in February, so we got we got a while before that was like the last thing we did one in 2020. It was like right before everything shut down. We did it.
I was there.
I know you handed out the Cougar Award.
That's right. Famously, Alex hands out the Cougar Award every year at Mr. Humboldt.
And so I'm happy about for that Cougar Award doing that is it shows other women what they can do and how they can move forward. I'm lucky you asked me to do this.
You're embracing your cougardom.
It shows other women how they can too be a cougar.
They can do all kinds of things. They don't have to get stuck. They can do outrageous things. You know, that's totally safe. You know, but they can do things that will move them forward in life, and they don't have to be stuck in a role.
Yeah, be the cougar.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's been fun. I'm so glad you decided you want to do this. And
okay.
Yeah. We'll see you out there.
Okay, well, thank you so much to the grand dame of Arcata, Alex Stillman, for joining us today. And what a time to be alive. Yeah.
We thank you all for listening this week. We're edging out of the masks, but I would ask everybody to just, you know, be compassionate, be considerate as people reprogram their brains onto yet another new paradigm that we have to all exist in. Just be kind in how you do that. And as always, please get vaccinated. Good Lord.
Yes.
We can be done with this faster.
Just please do that. And just stay safe out there. Thank you. And goodbye to you, Andrew.
Goodbye, Steph.